Listening to Talking Heads. Thanks for sharing a part of your afternoon with us today. This hour on the programme, we're meeting another of the candidates in September's general election. And we're joined in the studio by Ray Harmer, who's contesting the seat in Peel. Good afternoon, Ray, and welcome to Talking Heads.
Thank you. That's mine.
We've spoken in the past on the telephone because
yes.
You're a Peel commissioner.
Yes,
you're chairman of the commissioners, I think, aren't you, in Peel? Or?
I was until May this year.
Right, good stuff. So we've spoken a few times, but we've not met before. What makes you think that you'd make a good MHK?
Well, basically, because firstly, I would fight for Peel and Peel residents. I think I understand the problems that the Peel has, but also the problems that the nation has with its financial stewardship.
Yes, yeah. What do you think? Because I was looking through the little questionnaire that we send out to all the candidates, and unusually, the questions about, you know, do you think that this government's done a reasonable job? You kind of tick yes to most of those boxes, and for a non-sitting member, that's quite unusual.
Well, I think, you know, the government has to be applauded where the government has done really well. And, you know, we've got a growing economy, we've got low unemployment. We're always quite ingenious in the way that we flex, but there are some really fundamental issues that they're not tackling. That is almost a blind spot and a complacency, and they're the ones that I'm focused on.
And why do you think that is? Because it's easy to sit outside the system, isn't it, and to look at it and decide that people aren't doing what they ought to be doing. But if it was that simple, why haven't they been doing it?
I think they've, to catchphrase, may have been a bit long. I mean, I was sat in Tynwald last week and, you know, Alan Bell said, well, you know, we've had good times and maybe we're not concentrating hard enough when the times are good. And,
yeah.
You know, you look from, you can see, you know, as an average resident, you can see that quite glaring sort of mistakes and complacency is coming in, and that we're perhaps investing in things that we shouldn't be doing and projects that we should be avoiding. Really.
So you just think that they've been there too long and they've got a little bit lazy with it all?
A little bit, and also whether there are also the skills that are needed in the job. You know, it's having those financial skills to be able to look at a balance sheet and say, well, perhaps there's a problem here or there's a problem there.
Good link then onto my next question, because, you know, you talk about the skills required to read a balance sheet. We don't really want a keys that's comprised entirely of accountants, though, do we?
No, exactly not. But one of the areas that I looked at my final year was economics at Cambridge, and you have to have that broad sense of skills, and also a business degree,
yes.
That you can look at the sort of general issues and actually take on a fresh approach and actually look at it as one government. I think one of the problems is that we put everything in small compartments,
yeah.
Rather than actually saying, well, it's all taxpayers' money, we need to come up with the best outcomes.
Oh, yeah, so this is, you know, is it a revenue account or is it a capital account?
Absolutely.
Actually, it's all taxpayers' money,
absolutely.
Isn't it? All right, well, you've got a fairly interesting past looking at your bio, so tell us a bit about that. Tell us a bit about Ray Harmer's background.
Well, first of all, I started off, I was born in a council home, large family, seven children,
yeah.
And very much a strong work ethic. You know, you don't get anywhere without sort of actually pushing for it and opening
first
doors.
Up, best dressed,
that kind of thing. And but it was very relaxed, very warm family as well, and you know, place where you could make mistakes. And as I grew up, I went in sort of maths and science, and that's what took me to Cambridge. From there, I became an engineer, graduate engineer, sponsored by OVARUP in London. Worked on a number of large infrastructure projects as an engineer,
yes.
Communications engineer. Following that, I met my wife who moved to the Isle of Man, that's where, you know, got introduced to the Isle of Man, and
yes.
That's where I fell in love with the Isle of Man, and I've been here ever since.
Really. How long ago is that?
That's 17 and a half years.
17 and a half years you've been a Manx resident.
Yes.
Good stuff. Well, I mean, you're a come-over, but there's nothing wrong with that. and do you think that might sort of hold you back as far as your political aspirations are concerned?
No, I don't think so. I think when I've been going around doors, the main thing about Peel is incredibly pragmatic, sensible, very open, friendly, and I think they're looking for their best candidate. Really.
Yeah, and you've got some experience now of politics, even if it's only at a local authority level. Do you think that that's been useful?
I think it's been absolutely vital. I think, you know, I echo other comments that really saying, well, you've gone through local authorities, you've got to really understand the issues on a local basis, and it's been, you know, like I said, it's been absolute honour and privilege to serve as chairman.
Yes. And is that why you did it? Did you get involved in local politics with the view that one day you might stand for Keys?
No. It has been a journey. You know, very much I started the whole thing because I was absolutely passionate about Peel. I was passionate about the things that were going on in Peel, and I really wanted to make my contribution. And but it's become clear that over the last few years that there are issues. That's where I feel that I can contribute and deliver a good result.
You're employed in the finance sector, I think, aren't
That's
you?
That's right.
And you're a Cambridge graduate, so I assume that you're on a pretty good salary. What will it be like to become an MHK on a basic sort of 30-odd plus expenses? Will you be able to cope with that?
Yes, because the biggest thing I see, and, you know, I would encourage others to do, is that you're doing it to serve the people, and that's the most important thing.
You need to put meat on the table first, don't you? And I assume that your family have grown used to a certain sort of standard of living. Are they going to be happy to have potato soup for a while you get your feet under the table of politics?
Well, I think the thing with you manage your own finances first, and you make sure that they're all in order so that you can take on a project like this.
So you've not got any worries about that? All right, tell me about your politics. Would you suggest that you're a left-winger, a right-winger, or pretty much down the middle?
One of the reasons why I never really went into politics in the UK is I couldn't pick a party that I actually liked. I thought they were all pretty weak in certain areas.
Yeah.
You know, if you take the Tory, they've got no heart for the common man.
Yes.
And but they have a fantastic financial head, and you need that sort of sensibility. And so on that sort of financial side, I'm very much inclined that way.
Yeah.
On a Labour side, I'm very much come from a working class background, so I have a very sort of, you know, that sort of ethic. The one thing I'm not is probably a Liberal Democrat,
right?
Because certainly the way that they've promised one thing and then do something completely different.
Yes.
You know, it's taking the best of both, really.
So you're standing as a pure independent. You're not allied to any of the various groups that are,
no, not at all.
Because why? Because you thought you could do a better job as an independent, or just that these various groups that are in the Isle of Man didn't appeal to you?
Well, I think, to be honest, yes. I think that at the moment there are some good things about them. I mean, you know, certainly from Liberal Van, and they're asking questions, and nobody seems to be asking questions. So I think what they're doing there is very, very good in that sense.
Yes.
In terms of the Isle of Man, it is very much an independent story, but I think it is a case, and particularly in this situation now, we need a really strong, hard financial head.
Yeah.
At the same time, we need a sympathetic nature to the most vulnerable in society.
Is that possible, though, or, you know, can those two things ever go hand in hand, do you think?
Yes, because we need to all work together. We need to work together as a community. You know, one of the examples I give is, you know, we work towards a playground. We only had 5,000 in the budget, but we built a playground in cloth workers, and it's worth 40,000 because people work together, the school, Heritage Homes, Barclays,
yes.
Sponsorship money. And it's that kind of approach where that if you work together and if you look at novel solutions, you can actually make the money stretch, in essence.
What do you think about this current government that we've had for the last 5 years? Do you think that it's been good, bad, indifferent? David Cannon says it's the worst he can remember.
I think it's lost direction and leadership. I think it's also very complacent. I mean, they spent 4.8 million just the other week, and when you've got £189 million deficit, so there is a sense of complacency. I was always very impressed with Miles Walker and Donald Gallagher. I think, you know, they steered the country very well, but that just seems to be misdirected. And one of the things that they started on restructure, but they didn't know why they were doing a restructure. Now, if you're in business and you've been in any merger or acquisition, the last thing you want to be doing is putting new names on business cards and,
yes,
spending thousands. They didn't really seem to know where they were going, and I think that's been the real issue.
Do you not think that it's more sensible now, though, the way that government is set up? Do you not think that the departments make more sense?
as it said, there's elements of it. I think you've got a DOI that is now a monster in terms of size, and you've got it includes planning, which I don't think is appropriate, because you've almost got the same person judging.
Yes.
Yeah. What they're doing, and so they're putting their own planning applications that then say, yes, well, we agree with that, and so you haven't got that control in there. Department of Economic, that's kind of the right thing if it delivers.
Yes.
But I think what you've not got there is you don't have any financial scrutiny, so you haven't really got anything that says, look, because there's this process called BEAR, and they look for 5% increase, but they don't say, well, let's see how we can trim the budget
right
without affecting outcomes. And that's where we need to focus on, is outcomes. It's what happens on the street. It's your healthcare, it's your education, and it's your, you know, your benefits.
You say that you admired Miles Walker, you admired Donald Gelling. I mean, I think it was Donald Gelling that said that he would he'd be much happier presiding over success than over failure, because for donkey's years, 20-odd years, the Isle of Man government's been doing very well, thank you. So those people as chief ministers probably didn't have the challenges of the current chief minister, did they?
Well, you know, it comes back down to one of the key issues, which is the VAT agreement. I just don't think that they've dealt with that very well. I don't think, you know, they're far-sighted enough. Like I say, I'm not totally critical, because I think, you know, even bigger is the 0-10 agreement. You know, if that fell through, the industry would be in significant problems.
Yes.
But they haven't really grasped, and they haven't shown the direction of where they think where the nation's going.
Well, reading your manifesto, you say that you think that the VAT agreement ought to be renegotiated. I'm just a simple bloke. I'm not an economist or a financial expert in any way. It strikes me that it's a bit of a game of poker, and we've not really got very good cards. I mean, how can we renegotiate that?
Well, I think the first thing you do is there's a number of things, and you know, there's a number of eminent people, including Hugh Davison, who sort of concurs with what I'm saying. For example, you know, we've often heard said there's no relationship between other government ministers. You've got to get that right. You've got to get meet and know those people. Certainly any negotiation I deal with on a day-to-day basis is critical. Secondly, you have to really get your facts right. Now, last week on the radio, it was said that we had one small team. We've got one small team dealing with EU, dealing with the VAT, and dealing with 0-10. You've got to basically have a team that will actually get the facts. The third issue is that the current government is saying they're going to do nothing. Well, you've already lost if you say you're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
And fourthly, we know for a fact that the VAT is quite a high amount. It's actually collected. For example, $235 million is collected in one Castletown company. So we need to base the agreement more on what we actually collect, rather than some notional value of what they think our GDP is and what we think our GDP is.
So you think that the whole formula is wrong, that it's based on erroneous data?
Yeah, basically, I think. And the fifth thing is that you can't have a 40% drop in government income, and that's where I think the complacency is. 189 million, that's half a million every day.
Yeah.
In 1978, the Isle of Man unilaterally cut its the amount it paid to the UK. It's that kind of we need that sort of, you know, hard negotiation to get the deal that the Isle of Man needs. And if you take other examples, you could say, well, we're small. That's a double argument. If we're so small, then it doesn't really matter to them, in one sense.
I think Anne Crane said that we don't really come up on the radar much as far as the UK is concerned. We're insignificant.
But on the same token, then that actually you can say, well, you know, why are you focusing on that? If you look at any, and then there's a sense of British fairness. If you look at the Gurkhas, you look at Scotland smaller than England, you look at Wales, you know, when you negotiate, you say, right, what is the right value? What is the figure that I'm negotiating for? And you go for it. What's happened now is they've just given up.
Well, you're a very brave man to suggest that nobody within Treasury has come up with the right formula, I have to say, because, you know, that's effectively what you're saying.
Well, not quite. I spoke to somebody in Treasury about this in December, and he felt, somebody quite senior, that the arrangement then was slightly disfavouring the Isle of Man.
Right.
So if he was saying that to me then, that means that we've lost our backbone. And worse still, they could come back again. And you know.
Well, I think Anne Crane said that they were all for walking away for it.
I said that the number of times, three times. This is the third negotiation in 5 years. And if you look back historically, it's come back again.
You don't think that actually this sense of British fair play has been working for us, in that we've still got the agreement that they would probably rather do without.
Yes, and we have to negotiate hard. Like I say, we have to, seek a sense of fairness.
Okie dokie, we're talking to Ray Harmer, who's standing in Peel.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio.
So I think that, we're touching now on what is probably the biggest threat to the Isle of Man at the moment, the VAT bombshell. You think that we ought to negotiate harder. How is that likely to start happening from September, supposing that you're elected?
Well, the first thing is that if you elect people with that view, it will happen. As I said, the current government aren't going to look at that issue again. Firstly, you have to get your facts right. You have to build that team. And more importantly, you have to build those relationships, and then you can build on that and go back to.
But again, I mean, the current government, you know, we're on the British Irish Council, and they would say, well, we do quite a good job in terms of that. We went down to the City of London. We're constantly trying to foster relationships with people in the UK who are important to us. So, isn't this a bit of a wish list to say that, you know, if you and a lot of other people are elected in September, things are going to change?
No, I don't think it is. I think I think there are a number of people in the House of Keys as well that have got a backbone, and will go back on this issue.
Do you think it's as simple as that, just a lack of backbone?
Partly, yes.
Okay. Tell me a little bit more about what your campaign is going to comprise.
Well, as I said, on a national issue that we talked about, VAT, and also there's a financial responsibility. It's, you know, where there has been waste, you know, you've got infrastructure projects that make no sense.
Well, give me some examples.
As you know, there's the Richmond Hill, there's the roundabout, there's tarmacking in the middle of nowhere, and you go, well, that's a nice stretch of road. You've got that kind of thing going on, and. But for Peel, it's kind of the reverse. We've had a huge explosion in numbers. We've had 60% since 2001.
Yeah.
But we've not got the representation in Peel. We should have two MHKs. We should have the investment in nursery places. There aren't enough nursery places for everyone who wants one. You know, for me, that's another key issue, is to fight for that investment.
What sort of things are you hearing on the doorstep? Have you actually started door knocking?
Yes, I have. Yes.
And what sort of things are you hearing from people? Are people really bothered about these big issues like the VAT bombshell and reciprocal healthcare and, you know, these things that we tend to hear about in the news quite a lot? But I sometimes wonder whether or not the man and woman in the street really care.
Well, you always meet one or two that maybe not, but I think the vast majority are. But they expect the politicians to deal with it, and they expect some answers. So they're not... They're still, you know... Particularly nursery places, you know, particularly in Peel, the sewage situation. You know, there's not been that.
So are you finding that on the doorstep, that people are effectively asking, what's in it for me?
They're seeing the fact that they've, you know, particularly in Peel, they've built the houses, but they've not built the roads and the other issues, the schools and things like that, the nursery places that they need.
Given that government is facing a 40% cut in its revenue, well, it's faced a 40% cut in its revenue now for some time, what's going to happen? Because we can either make more money to make that up, or we can spend less money and cut our cloth accordingly. Which route do you think we should go down?
Well, we're limited with tax cuts, because the island is one of the key things, is its tax base. If you can't indefinitely increase tax... We have a problem, which is in the fact that the loss of the VAT, if we did nothing, would use up the reserves in 7 years.
Yes.
The reserves are for other things, you know, like bank shocks and things like that. It's not meant as a gap in revenue. What will have to happen, the plan that we need, and this is one of the reasons I'm quite sort of concerned, is the government needs a transitional plan. It needs to say, we actually do need to reduce the employment in the public sector. Now, 60% of costs... in the public sector 60% is due to costs on staffing costs.
Yeah.
So, but you can't, you mustn't allow there to be shocks into the system. You can't just suddenly
tell every department to cut 30% of the staff.
No, what you've got to do is you've got to come up with a transitional project that will take people from the public sector into an increased private sector. In addition, you've got to look at building on service industries that already exist and expanding those. Yeah. Not going into the latest flavour of the day, but looking at sort of IT services, things like that, where you can build and strengthen and grow the economy. And thirdly, we need to look at our education and vocational training because, for example, the diamond industry in Castletown is a nice little niche business, but they bring people over from the UK.
Rather than train their own.
Yeah. So we're going to have to be a bit more flexible with our international business school, maybe broaden that out, maybe look at having other sort of training and vocational skills and developing the economy that way. But we need a plan. I think the biggest thing, as I say, combats to complacency, is the fact that there isn't this plan. You know, we have had this hole for some time, but we haven't said, how are we going to grow? Because unless there is a shift from into the private sector, the economy's not going to grow, and you're not going to close that gap.
So government is busy saying, don't worry, it'll all be all right at the end of the day, but they're not saying how. Is that...
That's the problem.
Yeah.
And it's £500,000 every day, and they're not saying the how. And if we do nothing, what will happen is that in 5 years' time, we'll have no reserves left.
In terms of the government not saying, what do you think about the Freedom of Information Bill?
Well, I think it's needed. I think one of the things is lack of scrutiny. If I give one example, and it's difficult enough as a commissioner, I was trying to get information about the sewerage, and we're still having problems getting any information. I was met with closed gates. I was met with somebody who would sit by me and watch me while I was... And I wasn't allowed to copy anything. I had to read it.
Yeah.
And there's this incredible secrecy.
Yeah.
Now, if there's mistakes in your numbers, well, then fix them. But don't just hide them away.
And what do you think that is? Is that just people covering the backs, do you think?
Maybe, but it's maybe a cultural thing, and maybe just the rules need to change, that we need to say, look, actually, we all make mistakes, but we're open and honest about them, and we and more importantly, the taxpayer is paying these people, so they deserve to know.
I'm interested in your ideas about privatising things. Are you talking about corporatising a lot of things which at the moment are done by central government or by civil servants and public sector employees?
Yeah, I think we do need to do that. I think one of the key ones, first ones, you know, this is where the hard level situation, as I said, you know, the vulnerable are the most important, education and the vulnerable in society, homelessness situation, the drugs that again we've been complacent about that exist. But to counteract that, so that we can focus on that, we have to make hard-headed decisions. Mm. One of those is the MEA shops. Why are we competing against, you know, other shops in, and why is the government running it and running it at a loss?
Well, it's so that Mrs. Miggins can pay a gas, her electric bill in Port St Mary or wherever. I think that was the excuse that was given, wasn't it?
We got post offices. You know, it's this kind of illogical. I'll give another example I was given yesterday about education. If you're a supplier, it's very difficult for you to be on the permanent list. Mm. So you kind of either make a choice, you know, and there's one teacher struggling. At the same time as then the teachers can't get jobs, they've then got a course for 15 more teachers every year. There's a lack of joined up thinking.
Yeah.
And going back on the privatising thing, you know, we often laugh when I play squash, you know, somebody, the light man will come round and fix the lights, you know, the one next door fails, and you know it's not going to be fixed for another 2 years.
Yeah,
and it's this, you know, so maybe private.
I like the idea of that. I mean, there have been talks recently about the number of jobs that aren't being done properly, and I'm a great believer in people working for themselves. I'd love to see a lot of workers' cooperatives set up in the Isle of Man, where everybody then takes ownership of what they're doing and will hopefully do it better and more efficiently. I don't know if it's ever going to work. What about you?
Completely agree. I mean, one of the things I'm passionate is the cooperative, and if that side of, you know, in the UK is the whole concept of the cooperative, which is why I've, you know, have a membership card and I've got my credit card with the cooperative. I was interested in what you were saying before about building houses, because again, people building houses individuals doing that, you're allowing them to be creative. And then it's the ethos that I had, because my dad built his own house with his uncle. And you've got to give people the tools to help themselves, and that's where you can best, the government works best.
All right, as a facilitator for people.
Facilitator, rather than a loan or a...
We've got about 10 seconds left. Tell us why the people of Peel should vote for Ray Harmer in September.
Representation, investment, and a sound financial head that will meet the needs and protect the vulnerable and the least well off.
Excellent. Ray Harmer, it's been lovely meeting you today, and thanks very much for coming in.
Thank you.